Brett Worthington is back in the chair with a wrap of the news for this week. Hello, Brett.
Hello, Edwina.
So this trucking story, it's the story that keeps on giving. And when we say this trucking story, do elaborate.
Well, what it is it's to do with a trucking tribunal. It's called the Road Safety Remuneration Tribunal. It's an independent tribunal. And why everyone's talking about it is it had recommended pay changes to these what are called owner operators, or owner drivers is the term that everyone's using at the moment. Essentially, it wanted to bring in mandatory pay rates. And the industry is saying that would make them uncompetitive, and that the bigger trucking operators whose staff are protected by other awards would be able to compete for jobs in a way that these owner drivers cannot. So what you've seen kicking away, the industry's been campaigning, and now the government says that it's going to introduce legislation next week to shut down the Road Safety Remuneration Tribunal. It's unclear which way the votes were going. And so earlier in the week, the Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, really called upon the crossbench to back these reforms.
If the bill to abolish it is not passed by the Senate, and we don't know whether we have the numbers to do that, but we believe the numbers are moving in the Senate, there is change, the pressure on the crossbench is increasing as they see the shocking impact of this tribunal.
It's one that's been kicking around for some weeks. And like you said, it did really build momentum. It started by a few owner drivers speaking out. And now you're seeing that right up to the Prime Minister himself speaking. So the focus then shifted to the crossbench. Jackie Lambie says that she will be backing this abolition of the tribunal.
There'll be myself, Nick Xenophon, John Madigan, and of course Senator Lazarus. We're all going out for dinner Sunday night to make sure that that we've got the numbers to make sure this goes through. And as a matter of fact, the only person that we're waiting on is an answer from D.O. Wang.
And D.O. Wang has said that he will support those changes as well. The only one not on the crossbench who is not backing these is Ricky Muir. He, like Labor, will oppose the reforms. Labor frontbencher Brendan O'Connor spoke out against the reforms.
Malcolm Turnbull wouldn't know a truck driver if he fell over one last week, and all of a sudden now he's supposedly their best friend. Well, if he was the best friend of the transport industry and road users of Australia, he'd be trying to work out differences, not use this as a political football.
And a political football it will remain, however, because it's coming up in Parliament this week. Now, some very interesting figures. We talk a lot about foreign investment in agriculture and wait with bated breath, quite tragically, for the Foreign Investment Review Board's annual report. What has it told us?
So it's found that there's been a $1.9 billion jump in proposed foreign investment within the last year. It did come out in the annual report, and they're saying that both the volume and the value of investment is on the up. One of the big takeouts has been that China has been the lead investor, with the US following. For many years, the US had really been leading the way, but it was China that was attracting the headlines in this space. So now that the Foreign Investment Review Board's annual report has come out and said that China has taken over and is in the lead, it did come as the University of Sydney and KPMG released a report this week called Demystifying Chinese Investment in Australia. It's something that attracts headlines right across the country. It sets talkback lines into meltdown when people talk about this debate because it's a heavily emotional one. Sydney University Professor Hans Hindriski co-authored the report and says that there were 12 deals that were in beef, dairy and cotton sectors that were worth about $375 million.
One of the reasons why Chinese investors come here and why agricultural trade is growing is there's a crisis in the Chinese food market, a crisis of confidence. People don't trust food security in their own country in China. And a place to go is Australia.
One of the fascinating bits about this has been that I feel that, Ed, we talk about China pretty much every day. There's barely a day goes past. And now that But that wasn't being reflected in the investment that you're seeing here. There'd been quite slow growth, really. But this last year has been somewhat of a breakthrough with this foreign investment in agriculture in particular.
Yes, it's very interesting. And the remarks and the interview a little later in the program with the chairman of that Foreign Investment Review Board points out some very intriguing things about, you know, Australians generally loving to hate one country that's doing foreign investment. And that's gone from, you know, the US to the UK to Japan. Now China seems to be the one that's causing the problems. You know, we sort of shift our allegiances depending on what's up for sale and or debate. So, yes, still a lot to be talked about, and no doubt it will be, because it's a federal election year.
Election? What election? I don't know anything about it.
Who knew? However, let's face it, there's, you know, real enthusiasm for investment in agriculture. Food is the buzz item of the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's brought a venture capitalist from the Silicon Valley in the United States out to Australia. He's out touring around trying to meet with some of Australia's wealthiest people and institutions to look at this ag startup space. Because what's happening back at home for him in the US is there's been a tenfold increase in ag startups. They say that it's really starting to boom now. And so Finisteer Ventures partner Dr. Spencer Morn is out here in Australia right now. He's pitching opportunities. He does concede, though, that the pool of money here in Australia is somewhat smaller than that in the States.
It's much more developed in the US, and there is consequently many more products for people, institutions, so on, that want to put their money into those funds. It's sort of a strange situation in some ways in Australia where there's a lot of money, but I don't think there's a huge number of opportunities for those investors to put their money to work in these areas through funds.
There's been some fascinating things in the States, particularly in drought. We heard some stories, I think, some months ago now where they were looking at that startups really looking into this drought and water space that California is going through, quite a crippling drought at the moment, and startups were taking a bit of a lead role in that non-government space of funding work into dealing with drought.
Well, if you're looking for lateral creative thinkers, Silicon Valley is probably a pretty good place to start, isn't it? Now, we're not going to count our chickens before they're hatched, but I hear whisper that there may be some pretty good rain on the way later in the year.
Well, they're saying there's a 50-50 chance that parts of Australia will see wetter than average conditions in coming months. It's the La Nina is what everyone's calling it. And so often, but not always, it is associated with above average winter spring rainfall over northern, central and eastern Australia. If it does eventuate, it will be very much welcome news for these southeastern grain growers, particularly in the Victorian wheat belt. Western Victoria has been battling through quite a crippling drought in recent years. It's the flow on earth is that you've seen rural debt increase. It puts uncertainty into that space and really does affect the community levels of these small towns right throughout that area. Nothing, though, is guaranteed. Senior climatologist Darren Ray says that the modelling in Australia and overseas is delivering mixed forecasts at the moment.
There's certainly cool water under the Western Pacific Ocean that's progressively making its way eastwards, and the warm El Nino ocean in the Eastern Pacific is starting to dissipate and dissolve. And a number of the models in the world are seeing that happening as well. And there's three of the 11 that I look at are predicting a weak La Nina by wintertime.
So if you're a grain grower, what you want is you want rain now leading up to sowing. And that typically kicks off around Anzac Day. Then you want some follow-up rain throughout winter and then spring rain right at the end before you harvest the crop to really boost those yields and get them going. And to be honest, after a lot of growers have had no rain for such a long period of time now, I think they'll take any drop they can get.
Yeah, I agree. And it's that difficulty, you know, that we used to sort of rely on weather patterns, and there was some rhythm to that. There would be what was called the autumn break, and there would be, you know, expected rain would actually happen. But that has completely changed over the last decade. I don't think there is a regular pattern anymore. Well, most growers, you know, tell us there isn't. So it is going to be interesting. I hope it kind of comes through to them.
You hope that for the growers out there. You also hope it for the Weather Bureau, because they're held to, they're the ones that everyone blames. I mean, it's not their fault that it hasn't fallen. But it will be interesting to see if this autumn break does come through later this month and throughout spring and winter. So while grain growers are closely watching the sky, it will be too little too late for many rice growers. It's been a really mixed year for them. The harvest is about halfway through at the moment. There's been solid crops for those that did plant, but many didn't because of a lack of rain. And what that means is the national crop will be down significantly this year. Jeremy Morton is the president of Rice Growers Association of Australia, and he says access to water has been the defining factor this season.
The crop is significantly lower than last year and the year before that as well. So that's mostly down to low water allocations. There's, you know, water availability just isn't there, and that's also impacted on the temporary market for water. So that's high, and that people have that decision to make about whether they grow a crop or whether they sell the water.
Brett, what has been catching your attention this week?
There was this fascinating piece from the BBC World Service. So it's called The Salon. And what they've got is they've got six journalists from around the world to head to salons in all these different places. So from Tokyo to Johannesburg and Beirut even.
Like the hairdressers, you mean?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. So they're going in and they're talking with women. And all these things that they've talked about range from race to class, wealth, sexuality. And they're just all these different social factors that are at play. And the theory being that you're putting a lot of trust in a hairdresser when dealing with your hair. And it's a bit of the cone of silence in a way that people say that you really relax into it and feel like you can talk about your life in a way that you might not talk about it with your partner or even with your friends and family, that kind of anonymity that comes with some people with going to the salon. And there's just these fascinating insights from and things that I hadn't really thought about. So there was one place where they go to, and because they feel that the term barber and then the term salon are quite gender-heavy terms, they're talking about they call it a shop, and the thought being that, you know, the barber is typically for men and quite cheaper, whereas salon, you're doing the exact same thing, but it's typically for women, and that you put the price about 100,000 times up on what you'd be paying.
Yeah, no pay gap there, no.
But it's just fascinating to hear how there's all these common issues that you're seeing and being chatted about in salons right around the world. Mm. And the way that it's just brought together, it goes for about 50 minutes. So if you've got time to have a listen to it,
sounds beautiful.
I'd check it out.
I want to do one in rural Australia because I tell you what, they are the lifeblood of many rural areas. It is the therapy session. It is the laugh with friends. It's sometimes the only time people sit down.
And I remember Lucy Barber, one of our reporters, did a great piece, I think it's a couple of years ago now, where she headed out and chatted with someone who, the lady, their family was going through drought, and she still made that going to the salon, I think it was weekly or fortnightly, whatever it was, as part of the routine, because that was the relief that got you away from the property. That's also
online.
I can see it,
Brett. We love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brett Worthington with the news this week, and you can find all those stories online at abc.net.au/rural.